Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, with us again this Friday on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Steve, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, Steve, we've been talking to you for weeks. We've been talking a lot of draft, right? We already talked last Friday, about the Browns' first-round pick. But Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who goes second round for the Browns, that's a guy that a lot of people, and I know you guys thought would be, was you had him as a top 30 prospect, would go in the first round. A lot of people thought the Browns might take him in the first round. Instead, they trade up a few spots and get him in the second round. How big a steal will that turn out to be for the Browns?
Yeah, I mean, I like it quite a bit. It sounds like he dropped potentially because of, you know, late medical concern, whatever it is. But I think, first off, it goes back to the position that the Browns are in, which is, you know, the ability to not only just take the best players on the board, but trade up to go get him. We don't always advocate trading up, but when they executed the trade in our system, because we can grade trades too at PFF, they actually won the trade for a trade up, which is very rare. And then you go get a guy that he was 19th on our draft board in JOK. So I think it just really completes this offseason overhaul of adding more versatility to the back seven, coverage versatility, the ability to line up in multiple ways, create flexibility, adjust to offenses, and then you have a guy like JOK, who's an incredible athlete. And think about, you know, you got to play Lamar Jackson twice a year and some of these other matchups that you have. I think he's just going to be a vital piece, you know, in that big equation for the Browns defense.
If the answer is no, that's okay. And maybe the answer is JOK. Maybe you just answered it. But was there a pick with the Browns that you said, ooh, that's really interesting, or that's a really sneaky or clever pick? Not necessarily the best pick or best value, just something that jumped out at you that said, wow, that's a really clever move or a really sneaky pick for them.
I think they all were. And not to talk up the Browns too much, but, you know, you add in Anthony Schwartz, who has legitimate crazy track speed, and he went way higher than he is on our board. It's because he's not a very good football player right now, but that's a worthwhile gamble to take, especially when it's really not a skill set that you have on that side of the ball. And then you see like a James Hudson out of Cincinnati, who was a tackle, but is probably going to project a guard at the next level. You look at Wyatt Teller in the last year of his contract. Hudson might be ready for that redshirt year and then step in as a starter if Teller has to go. Tommy Togiai, a guy that can already play snaps, playing against the run as an interior defensive lineman. And then I thought the last two picks, Richard LeCount and Demetric Felton, are two guys who were terrible from a workout standpoint, but really good football players. And so I thought the Browns were smart to just get productive players. I think there's a couple different ways to attack those later rounds. Sometimes you go with, you know, athleticism and perceived upside. Other times you just go with production, guys that are good football players. So LeCount running a bad 40, but he's been awesome playing safety at Georgia. And Felton looks like a good athlete on the field. He just tested horribly at UCLA, and he's a running back wide receiver hybrid who looked really good at the Senior Bowl. So I really, really like so many of the Browns picks because of, you know, their process during the whole thing.
It doesn't matter how fast you are if you can't catch the ball. So how hard is it to make somebody a football player who's really – I mean, I go back and think about like Greg Little, obviously a different player than what you're talking about here, but just a really big athletic guy, couldn't catch a cold. So how – and he never worked. So how do you go about teaching a guy to be a football player, and how feasible is it that you can – that they can get what they need out of him?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Schwartz pick is probably, in theory, the riskiest one just because it is a third-round pick. But, you know, I know it's football, and it's it's way more complicated than percentages. But I still look at the fact that even a Greg Little's still going to catch like 80-85% of the passes in that are on target in his worst season. And a guy like Schwartz, even if it's, you know, use a little jet sweep type of, you know, integration into the offense, it's just something that the defense has to account for. Yes, you'd like to have him just be a cleaner wide receiver prospect, have better ball skills, and that is a bit of a projection. But as a guy that can kind of feel his way into the lineup, you know, using some gimmicky type stuff with the hope that he can develop, it's certainly a boom or bust type of thing, but the payoff could be incredible when you have a guy with legitimate 4.2 type of speed.
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, with us yesterday. Jonathan, who's not on with us today, he and I were getting into a debate about, you know, just where Baker Mayfield is in the pantheon of quarterbacks right now, and how do you judge that? I felt like he was judging it based on strictly last year as opposed to the whole breadth of his career. I mean, if you, I guess, were doing a quarterback power rankings heading into 2021, is Baker definitely in that top 10? Could he get into that top 5 realistically? Is he still more like a 10 to 15 range? I mean, where do you have him right now?
I mean, he's probably borderline top 10, and this is a project we'll be working on soon, but I really think the NFL has changed a little bit in the last few years, where I think the last decade plus of football, there was a very clear top 8 or top 9 quarterbacks, and I think we'd all agree on who those guys were if we took the time to list them out. Of course, it starts with Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, and Peyton Manning when he was healthy in a special tier. But I really think, you know, you've got Mahomes, and you have Deshaun Watson when he's out there, and you have Russell Wilson, and of course Rodgers and Brady getting older. But I think there's just fewer of those top 5 caliber guys, top 8 caliber guys. And I really think it might be QB 7, 8 through 20. They're not completely interchangeable, but, man, you can win with all of them, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses. And Baker's clearly in that group. And then it's just a matter of getting a little bit more experience and, you know, more production under his belt. And you say, okay, now he's got a chance to be a clear top 10. I think Dak Prescott's a good example of that, a guy who was just solid his first couple of years. But I don't think you'd put him in the top 10 after his first couple of years. But now as guys get older and retire, you're looking at Dak Prescott and saying, yeah, he's a top 8, top 10 quarterback probably. And I think Baker has a chance to do that this year and say, yeah, I'm a top 8 guy. You know, I'm going to be consistent there. I'll have my ups and downs a little bit, but I'm a top 8 guy. So I think Baker has that in him. But I think there's just this huge middle class of starting quarterbacks. And that's not a knock on these guys. That's a middle class starting NFL quarterback's really, really good. And I definitely think Baker's in that mix right now.
I was saying that all last year. Some years he may be 8, some years he may be 14, 15, 16. He's not top 5 to me, but I don't think you need that anymore to win in the NFL. You know, there's only so many Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jacksons to go around, and they don't win the Super Bowl every year, even though it feels like it.
Right, and so, again, I think it really just depends on, like, the ebbs and flows of the league. So, again, like, the last decade, generally, you'd have most of your Super Bowl quarterbacks were guys that you would throw in the top 8. And then you have a Jared Goff and a Garoppolo and a Joe Flacco or an Eli Manning just kind of emerge. But again, I don't think there's a clear cutoff over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years, especially as Brady maybe retires at some point and Rodgers gets older. You start to lose some of those clear guys. Now, maybe Trevor Lawrence jumps up in there. Maybe Baker does jump up in there. But again, I think we're at a point where the difference in quarterbacks, other than a few, are very tight, and it's going to come down to coaching and scheme and the whole supporting cast. And that's why I'm always saying, look, get as many receivers as possible. Get as many, you know, get that offensive line to a good spot so that you can create that ecosystem for your quarterback, because it really is going to be crucial in these coming years.
So now, Steve, I know you loved the Browns draft. You loved their free agency. Where do they stand now compared to the other, you know, top teams in the league, do you think?
I think they're in that upper tier of the AFC, but the AFC is going to be tough too, right? I mean, you can almost slot Kansas City, I think, into the divisional round, and then it's like, all right, who's around beyond that? I think it's going to be a battle in the AFC North with the Browns and the Ravens, and who knows? The Steelers could be good if Big Ben gets back on track. Who knows at this point in his career? The AFC East is going to be really tough. The Bills are the defending champs. But, look, you know, the Dolphins won 10 games, and the Patriots added a ton. You know, the Chargers got better. You know, and we don't. You know, the Titans have been good. The Colts have been good, and they should still be in the mix. So I think there's this second tier of AFC teams that the Browns are in behind the Chiefs, and it's going to be a battle just to see, you know, who are going to be the teams that are trying to knock them off the top spot, because you know, I think the Chiefs are the clear team, but that next group is I think getting pretty deep in the AFC.
What did you think of what Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincinnati did in the draft?
Pittsburgh, I hated it because of the running back pick, and I don't think they shored up their offensive line, which is a bigger issue. Still have concerns about their secondary. I like what the Bengals did, the Jamar Chase move, because that debate between Chase and Penei Sewell, I'm fine either way, and I think they played it well. So they got a stud wide receiver. They've got a trio now that Joe Burrow can throw to, and they added to their offensive line with Jackson Carmen, and really reshaped their defensive line as well. So I like that a lot. And I love what the Ravens have done from a process standpoint. I think the move to trade Orlando Brown, get the first round pick back, they get Jason Odafe away, really freak athletic edge defender, essentially for Orlando Brown. They exchanged all those other picks, but it was essentially Orlando Brown for a first rounder. And then they replace Orlando Brown with Alejandro Villanueva on the cheap for a good starting tackle. I think that's just great. Great process by the Ravens. So I like a lot of what they did. I think they had a good, solid draft. And just overall, they, well, like the Browns, they make a lot of what I would consider smart decisions throughout the offseason.
You may have covered this in a previous appearance, but I'm going to ask you anyway because I'm filling in today. What is a realistic expectation for Jadeveon Clowney? He's on his fourth team in 4 years. He hadn't had a sack in a year and a half. Mike Vrabel's coached him twice, and he didn't want him back. Like, I understand, like, Cleveland threw a celebration when Clowney signed here, but nobody else wanted him from the sounds of things. And the fact that he's on his fourth team in 4 years and he can't stay healthy, where is a realistic bar to set for what fans should expect from this guy? Because I can imagine Seattle fans rejoiced when he went there. Tennessee fans probably rejoiced when he went there. And it never lasted long in either of those places.
I think Clowney he's fascinating because he has gone from, I think, overrated to now underrated. So he was overrated if you were expecting a 10 to 15 sack guy that was a dominant pass rusher. He's never been that guy. He's always been kind of like a JPP, really solid run defender, will defeat blocks, set the edge, make some nice plays there, and just get after the quarterback at a reasonable level. But at PFF, you know, we chart every single play, not just sacks, and we don't judge pass rushers by 3 plays or 8 plays or 10 plays a season. So Clowney is a guy that, again, has still been winning at a solid rate when it comes to winning one-on-ones as a pass rusher. But the sack totals will come when you have a good pass rush around you, because sack totals are sometimes just lucky. You have to win, but you also, you know, you need the quarterback to hold on to the ball, or you need someone else to win and you clean it up, and, you know, various things like that. So I think Clowney is going to provide a reasonable pass rush opposite Myles Garrett. You throw Tack McKinley in the mix, and it's just a nice trio. And if Garrett continues to dominate and Clowney plays at the same exact level as he did last year when he had no sacks, or the same level he did in Seattle when he only had a handful, he will stumble into 6-8 sacks. He'll have sacks. You know, if he plays at the same exact level, those will show up, and it'll look like, oh, he got back on track. So I think he'll be the same player. And he did take a step back last year a little bit in Tennessee, but again, he didn't have much help over there either. They had one of the worst overall pass rushes, including his partner in crime, Harold Landry. So I expect Clowney to be a solid run defender, reasonable pass rusher. That's not all that exciting for the athlete that he is. But if he had 8 sacks this year playing at the same level, because he's got Myles Garrett and a couple other guys there to help him out, I wouldn't be all that surprised.
Steve, last thing, who blew it the most in the first round of the draft? The Raiders?
Yeah, I'd say the Raiders and the Steelers. I look at both of those based off how the whole offseason's gone. The Steelers tore apart their offensive line and never really built it back up. And the Raiders did the same thing. They tore apart their offensive line and then got a guy that even they, I think, acknowledged was a second-round type of player. You know, it's one thing to love a player. It's a second thing to understand value and where you can get them. And they could have had another – They did a nice job in the second round. I like the player they got there, Trevi Merrig from TCU, the safety. But, yeah, I didn't like the Raiders again for the third, fourth straight year, their first rounder. And none of those guys have panned out yet, so it's not like they have a great track record. And then I think the Steelers, they're building, you know, they're adding the icing to the cake without actually having the cake when you draft a running back in the first round.
Do you think he's a good, like, is he, I know it's not good value, obviously, especially with a bad offensive line, but is he a good player? If they do build the line at some point, is he a good player?
Najee Harris? Yeah.
He's
really good. He's a fantastic running back. You know, he's got pretty good vision and feel. I love his skills in the pass game. The problem is that skilled running backs just don't impact winning as much as we think they do. And the difference between the skilled running back and the average running back is minimal when it comes to winning football games. So it's just trying to get over that hump of, I see him, I see that he's good, I see these things that I really like as a player evaluator, but disconnecting that from the fact that it's just not going to help me win games until I fix, you know, 15 other things.
All right. Steve, good stuff as always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.